We'll open the hearing on for public health. Secretary, please take the roll.
Today is Wednesday, February 15th, 2023. Vice Chair Lenz.
Here.
Senator Beard.
Here.
Senator Glimm.
Here.
Senator Gross.
Here.
Senator Heinbaugh.
Here.
Senator Kelker.
Excused.
Senator Molnar.
Excused.
Senator Weber.
Here.
Chair McGilvery.
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we get started today, I'm just going to remind everybody to turn off their cell phones, put them on vibrate. If you're here to testify as a proponent or an opponent on any bill or resolution, please sign the list on the back of the room indicating if you're a proponent or an opponent and what agency you may represent. Just a reminder also that everything is videoed and live. All the mics are live. So with that, we'll begin the hearing on Senate Bill 282. Representative Lenz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of Senate Public Health, Dennis Lenz, Senate District 27, Far West Billings and North Laurel. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 282 seeks to redesignate our areas on aging. So the chairman allowed me to give you a map that you have in front of you of our current areas on aging. And you will note that it is unique. That big yellow section on the far right covers a lot of territory, as does the one from Fergus to Yellowstone and Bighorn. And there's a couple interesting ones in there as far as Flathead County sits by itself. Hill County sits by itself, as does Cascade. Missoula and Ravalli are just two county units there. There are limited resources for our elderly within this areas on aging, and they provide resources and meals and encouragement to the elderly within the state. What this bill seeks to do, I guess I'll give a little background. As I kind of got involved in it within our county, it just kind of became glaring that there needed to be a rebalancing. Not wanting to pick on the good Highline County of Hill County, but having them all by themselves on the Highline seems a little glaring. You know, Cascade, you could see, you know, the Golden Triangle being in with them, whatever it is. But as part of the process, I also talked to a commissioner out of Flathead County. He said the way they structured and the way they utilize the money, it would be difficult to put in another county. So be it. What this bill would do is create a structure for us to do that redistricting. They could take that uniqueness into account along with anything else that they could, and also seek to maximize the money being used for our elderly. And so that is the point of this bill. Mr. Chair, we just got a fiscal note on it, and I don't know if everybody has that. Oh, yes, I see they do. So there is some financial impact because it would create a task force that would work to redistrict that with many people involved in this. But we can talk about that, and I look forward to the discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Lenz. Do we have proponents for Senate Bill 282? Are there any proponents for Senate Bill 282?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Myers. That's M-E-Y-E-R-S. I stand here today in support of Senate Bill 282 on behalf of the Montana Area Agencies on Aging Association. So these are your AAAs that are across the state. They serve every county in every community. And we are grateful to the sponsor. He has been working with us for several months along with the department to look at what the best potential opportunities might be to look at redesignation. As you heard the senator say, there's a lot of complication and complexities that go into redesignation. And so, candidly, the AAAs initially were a little concerned about some of the proposed thinking. There's federal mandates that are involved in this statute that we have to take into consideration. There's language outlining how tribes, for example, can be served within their communities and where that hub has to sit within a county. And so while we were not necessarily opposed to the idea of redesignation, it was really important to the Areas on Aging that we give it the appropriate amount of time necessary to really identify what that designation and governance structure would look like. And so we are supportive of what Senator Lenz is proposing. We are very appreciative of his time. I also am not necessarily a fan of task forces all the time, but I do think that in this case it actually makes sense. I think we do have to look at where some of these hubs sit. We have to make sure that the services that have been provided continue to be provided, particularly as we see communities struggling with some of those community-based services. And I also think that the AAAs that will be involved in this, you know, they have been operating for a really long time under a particular structure. And so it's just going to take a little bit of time. And so I would appreciate your consideration in what we're proposing today. I do have a friendly amendment that I have talked with Senator Lenz about. The task force that's outlined in the bill does include, I think, two members of our AAAs, and we would just request to add two more simply because there are a variety of types of AAAs right now, and in looking at shifting that governance, we want to make sure that we get rural representation, urban representation, standalone counties, and so I would just ask this committee to consider that, and I'm happy to stand for any questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Further proponents? Seeing no further proponents in the room and none online, are there any? Are you a proponent?
Opponent.
Then opponents to Senate Bill 282.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the Senate Public Health and Welfare and Safety Committee. My name is Patrick Iwaki. That's spelled Y-A-W-A-K-I-E. I'm representing the Blackfeet Tribe today in opposition to Senate Bill 282 until these friendly amendments are made. In the Section 2, Subsection 6, Part B, Roman numeral 5, it lists tribal members as populations in low-income minority elderly committees or communities that will be analyzed in the task force review for service area planning. Both Montana tribal reservations and tribal members living in urban centers in the state fall within the service areas of the aging services. We have issue that with any legislation that has implications on tribal nations and members, if that legislation does not include tribal consultation in the planning efforts as provided in the guiding principles and documents found in MCA 215-142. We would like to see Section 1 amended to include Montana Department of Health and Human Services Director of American Indian Health or representative from the American Indian Health as part of the task force, as well as a notification of tribes amendment as well. For these purposes, we oppose Senate Bill 282 until these amendments are made. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents to Senate Bill 282? Seeing none. Any informational witnesses? To your left.
Left right there.
Great.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Marks, M-A-R-K-S. I am the director of the Area 4 Agency on Aging that covers six counties from Livingston to Helena, And I stand willing to answer any questions you might have for a AAA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. Any further informational witnesses?
Senator McGillivray, members of the committee, my name is Barbara Smith. I'm the administrator of the Senior and Long-Term Care Division. The Older Americans Act programs and the area agencies on aging fall under our purview. Should you have any questions, I'm here to ask to answer them. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Any other informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee. Seeing no questions from the committee. Senator Gross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for Mr. Iwaki. Mr. Chair, Mr. Iwaki, I've heard the words tribal consultation a few times today and definitely throughout the session. Can you just explain to us what that actually means?
Well, in the efforts of a perfect world, the term is good faith consultations, which provides that there's a mediator mediating both sides, where both sides have an opportunity to fully, you know, get to a consensus in any matter. And so in terms of, you know, our government-to-government relationship as tribes to the state, you know, that's something that we promote is that type of relationship building. And so in any effort, we're always striving for good faith consultations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Iwaki. That helps me a lot.
Thank you.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, Senator, looking at your map here, was there a reason ever given for why, like, Hill County, Flathead County, Cascade County stand alone? Was there a reason for that? Or did they have their own services, or did they have their own organization initially?
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, I asked that question a couple times. It wasn't very clear as to why that happened. It seemed, when I look at this, this kind of looks, for lack of a better word, within the arena we're in, political, like maybe Hill County had more pull at that moment, because there hasn't been, for quite some time, any redistricting done. So even when they kind of, for lack of a better word, refresh it every 4 years, they don't change the lines and such. But that's my understanding. And I haven't been able to dig to the bottom of that, Senator Weber.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So let's see, how was I going to put this? So say that this was, that's all right.
Okay. Further questions from the committee? I have one for Mr. Iwaki.
Chairman.
Yeah. Have you had an amendment drafted for the sponsor of the bill?
Not necessarily, but I can work with the sponsor for sure.
Okay, I would encourage you to work with the sponsor so we can see exactly what you mean for what you want.
Mr.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of lost my mind there for a second. For the sponsor.
Okay. Senator Lenz.
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, Senator, when was this map? You said it was every 4 years. When was this last looked at or changed? Do you have any idea?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Weber. That's kind of what I was alluding to. There is, and Barb Smith would be able to maybe give you a little more insight. I'm calling it a refreshing or renewing of what it is they do every 4 years. But the district lines haven't been touched for quite some time. And so I don't know how far that goes back.
We refer, Mr. Chair, to Ms. Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Weber.
Ms. Smith, did you hear the question? When was this last changed or redesigned, I guess?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Weber, the last time the map was had some redesignation work done, it was 17 years ago. The four-year cycle is a service planning cycle that's not related to the designation of the areas.
Oh. I want follow-up.
Follow-up.
So on this map is just the service areas. So what we're asking in this bill is to redesign the map, or what are we doing here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Weber, the bill would direct us, the department, to reexamine that designation status based upon changes in census, the directions under the Older Americans Act regarding who's in poverty, who's low income, how many we have over 80, how many we have over 60, so that we appropriately plan.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Smith.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, would the sponsor like to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. First off, before I forget, yes, I am open to adding a couple areas on aging to this. They feel like that would be helpful to make this a well-rounded committee. I am open to any tribal input on, because there are a lot of moving parts here. To me, when I started this, I thought, I never say anything's a simple bill. I guarantee that. But I thought this would be more straightforward than what it was. And so with all these moving parts, with the federal parameters that you're operating in, and at the same time, the people of Montana, that we need to maximize our resources to them, and they're limited. It's not great. Let's just admit it. It's not great for our elderly with these programs. As part of our discussion one day, we talked about how Winnet, Montana, and Petroleum County would get one meal a week, and then as part of a discussion going on, they says, well, at one point they weren't getting one meal a week. You know, the bar was freezing the meals, and then people could come by and get their meals. Well, that's, you know, as part of that discussion, we can discuss where we really are making the most impact and how we are helping our elderly the best we can. And I think there are good things being done within the areas on aging. And I just want to do it better. With that, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Lenz. Let's close the hearing on Senate Bill 284. We'll now open the hearing on Senate Bill 284. Senator Glimm, would you like to open on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Carl Glimm, Senate District 2, GLIMM. Today I bring before you a new take on a serious problem that we have in Montana as the problem of suicide. I think a lot of us, all of us, know what a problem suicide is for Montana. And I came up with a little idea, and I certainly won't say it's a simple idea, because in drafting it, it presented many challenges. But the idea was to try and see if we could get a report out of DPHHS that would provide some insight into prescription drugs that people are on, or really any kind of drug, if we can get it from a toxicology report. So, and I don't know what we'll find from that, but I thought it was a new way to look at the problem. And so what we're doing in this bill is annually, DPHHS would create a report that that would gather information from all suicides within the state And if a toxicology report is done, that information would be collected and reported. And then in addition to that, we would be adding a list of drugs to the prescription drug registry to see what kind of prescriptions these individuals have been prescribed to, at least, and try and find out what we can discern from that information. I think there is a little bit of concern of what the prescription drug registry, trying to make sure that we can keep that at least as much privacy as we can. And it's not my intent that within that prescription drug registry that all the pharmacists are able to see that. It's just a way of getting that information out and for us to aggregate that data. So I think there's got to be a way in that system to hide those fields and be able to not have that be information that everybody within that can see the prescription drug registry, which is limited, but even those people can't see all the information in it. But that's a way for us to collect that data. With that, Mr. Chairman, I hope that we could get some kind of information out of this report that might help the problem of suicide in Montana. So with that, I'll sit down and see if we have any proponents or opponents.
Thank you, Senator Glenn. Do we have proponents for Senate Bill 284?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Kuntz, KUNTZ. I'm the executive director for NAMI Montana. We're a grassroots organization that supports, educates, and advocates for Montanans who live with mental health conditions and their families. And we thank Senator Glenn for bringing this bill. It's a tricky bill for us, but I will say that the reality is we did used to do this for the suicide report, and we used to look really deeply into this suicide report. They used to go through all the EHRs and figure out what they were being prescribed. It was a really personnel intensive way to do it, but it worked too. So, and it was good information. It was helpful information. The one recommendation that I would do is either change it from just mental health meds to all meds or to black box meds. Because, for example, Singulair and Monte Lucast are two asthma medications that have black box warnings for suicide. And if you did this and didn't get those medications, you wouldn't really be learning probably what we would want to know. So that would be my suggestion, is the FDA has a list of what medications have warning for suicide, and that would seem like it would be a nice way to have this be a little bit more targeted. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Further proponents? Seeing none, do we have a further proponent? Okay. So, looks like we do have... Do we have any opponents for Senate Bill 284? Okay. If you're an opponent, step up.
Thank you, Chair McGravy, other members. My name is Tony King, K-I-N-G. I am a pharmacist. I'm here representing the Montana Pharmacy Association, and I'm always in a tough position in something like this because we do support the intent of the bill. We support what the bill was trying to do. Our board of directors had some concerns on some privacy and liability for patients and providers. Just as a brief history, the Montana Pharmacy Association presented the drug registry bill three times before it was passed. I was lucky enough to be chair on that board when we finally got it passed and initiated. It's been in existence for a decade plus now. I do believe the department that runs the drug registry is going to be on as informational later, so they might be able to answer some questions as well. We really do want to get to this information. We want to be able to support the crisis that's hitting Montana with suicides and mental health in general. We would probably support this bill if we made a couple adjustments to it. So that's why it's a soft opposition. If we can find a way to make it a little more private and to strike down some liability concerns from our providers, we would be in support of it. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. King. Further opponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bernadette Franks Ongoy, FRANKS-ONGOY. I'm the Executive Director of Disability Rights Montana. Disability Rights Montana is the federal protection and advocacy system designated in the state of Montana. Our mission is to advocate and protect for the civil and human and legal rights of Montanans with disabilities. Our work extends across the state, and we are proud to call nearly 250,000 adults and some 20,000 school-aged children our people. Our work brings us face-to-face every day with the stark reality about attempted and completed suicide in the state. Sadly, we have investigated instances of suicide in facilities and also have reviewed cases through our participation in the Mortality Review Committee for individuals with developmental disabilities. We know that many factors contribute to the high rate of attempted and completed suicide in this state, and we fully support the efforts to reduce those rates and ensure every Montanan access to competent, confidential, and community-based mental health services. As currently written, however, we do not believe that this bill serves those goals. Instead, we believe that this bill will further stigmatize mental illness and deter those who need care to not seek that care. We believe that the registry is an overreach of governmental invasion of privacy. The bill includes an existing registry of controlled substance, a new category undefined as mental illness medication. The bill requires all pharmacists to serve patients in Montana to provide a registry prescription drug information for medication prescribed to treat any mental illness. The team mental disorder is incredibly broadly defined. Under the broad definition of mental disorder, that would include everything from minor depression to schizophrenia. And it would also include other disorders that are not considered mental illness, such as dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, and even the effects of cerebral palsy, a predominant physical condition that in some causes a cognitive disability. If a doctor prescribes a patient a medication to address muscular cramps caused by cerebral palsy, that person's personally identifiable health care information, including their name, the medication they are prescribed, must be transmitted electronically to the state of Montana for inclusion onto a government registry. Moreover, this bill makes no allowance for off-label usage of medication. For example, a doctor frequently prescribes trazodone, an antidepressant, for low-level dosage to treatment of insomnia. And that would then have to be transmitted and placed on the registry. Under this bill, a personally identified healthcare information of thousands of Montanans with these conditions would be disclosed to the state in inclusion on this registry. The bill would leave the Department of Public Health DPHHS in the sole discretion to determine which medication must be reported to the registry without the requirement about how the department makes that determination, including whether the department is even required to include physicians and patients in that decision-making process. The bill authorizes the board access to personal information about specific individuals whose deaths have been ruled to be a suicide. I cannot stress enough that this bill allows government agents to access personally identified healthcare information about a specific individual. That's how the bill is written. I'm going to skip that section. I think it's really important, to the extent that this bill is about proving outcomes to reduce suicide attempts and completed suicide in Montana, we support the goals of that bill. But we do not believe the bill will advance those goals in its current form. We are very concerned that the bill allows the inclusion of an individual's personal identifying information in a research study without the consent, in this case, of the decedent's personal representatives. Some of you may think that consent is not necessary because an individual who is deceased does not have that right. However, the HIPAA regulations make it clear that personally identified healthcare information remains confidential for 50 years following the death of an individual. The bill provides this personal information without consent and thus provides little insight into factors contributing to the death. The bill assumes causation where only correlation is present. A better, more comprehensive research model exists. In House Bill 583 from the 2013 session, this body created the Montana Suicide Review Team. The bill contained appropriate privacy protections and consent requirements, which are not present in this bill. Under Section 16 of that bill, the program ended in June of 2016. Montana has participated in other morbidity review boards that perform similar functions in specific populations, such as fetal, infant, child and maternity mortality review, injury prevention, and domestic violence fatality review commission. And as I mentioned, we participate in the mortality review for people with developmental disabilities. I suggest that the legislature, if they want to collect this information, revisit the creation of the standing suicide review team. It is also far easier to control information when it is only accessible to a designated board that's contained in the state-maintained registry. We fear that the information contained in this registry could be grossly misused without any legitimate medical purpose. Even if such law were passed, people with legitimate mental health needs may avoid seeking help for fear that they would be included on a registry. It's something that we are very concerned about. Members of the committee, there are far better ways to provide such needed care for people with mental health needs in Montana and properly address Montana's remarkably high suicide rate. Putting people's private information on a government registry is not the solution and will likely make the problem worse by discouraging those who need help from seeking it. Thank you so much, and we urge that this bill not pass.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Amy Gromolis. It's G-R-M-O-L-J-E-Z. I represent the Billings Clinic. Mr. Chairman, members, I won't reiterate some of the earlier opponents' testimony. We really appreciate the senator bringing the bill forward. We think it has good intent, but from the the medical standpoint, we think it increases that stigma on mental health conditions. 25% of Montanans right now are taking some sort of mental health drug, and that's just the reality of where we're at today. We think that this will create a stigma by adding that to the registry. It's an expansion of the scope. And Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I do have a hearing up in House Energy.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
You may leave.
Thank you.
All right. Any other opponents in the room?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jean Branscum. That's B-R-A-N-S-C-U-M. I'm the CEO of the Montana Medical Association, and that's the association that represents physicians, medical students, and residents throughout our state. We, too, want to extend great appreciation to Senator Glenn for bringing this bill forward and the conversation forward in regards to suicide and thinking outside the box in regards to what we might can do to collect data and utilizing or looking at the registry as one of those vehicles. However, as previous opponents had indicated, we stand against that because we believe that the registry as it situates now to really capture information about controlled substances and that crossover to mental health medications is not a simple crossover, and would ask that you take a look at the bill intently and look at the provisions that are allowed for controlled substances, because all of those provisions stay true now for mental health in those particular sections. The approach that's taken also creates some unnecessary burdens for providers, and we don't believe that that's really the intent, but it makes the bill pretty impractical from the standpoint of physicians when they're just caring for patients. You heard earlier that it also fails to recognize that medications can be that would be required to be reported are for diagnoses that don't relate to mental health. So I'll give you one example is, if this bill passes, I think we should let all women know who have hot flashes that they might have medical records be part of the state government enterprise. Because there's a drug that works pretty good for hot flashes, but it's not for a mental health illness diagnosis, but it is one that is used for mental health diagnosis. So under this bill, that would need to be reported to the registry. And that would be then that person's record captured inside a government database. So the bill really positions the drug registry as a great resource for a collection of prescription drug information. And through the bill, you can see how it collects that. But at the end of the bill, in Section 6, I think you should take a look at it, also requires a mandatory lookup. And we just wonder, why is that being required? What information or data is being necessitated that when an individual goes in for a medication and they have a mental health disorder, that's a chronic disease, you know, what is the cause for a provider to have to go look every time into the prescription drug registry? We don't feel that that's necessary. That actually just adds to the overburdens that physicians and others, healthcare providers are facing today in regards to those administrative tasks that really don't lead to patient outcomes that are better for that particular patient. I also would just like to recognize that according to a report from DPHHS, approximately 90% of those who die from suicide have a diagnosable mental illness. So diagnosable. It may not have been diagnosed, and they may not be on medications. They may have completed suicide because it's not diagnosed. So I think when you take a look at suicide, you need to take a look at the whole picture in context. And we should be as interested in individuals who have completed suicide that in other information collected shows that they had a mental health illness, but they didn't get the medication. It's not in the registry because they didn't have that access to that behavioral health. So again, I'm just going to go back to what other folks talked about. We used to have the suicide team. I was doing some research. It was over in the Department of...
Ms. Branscum, can you... Okay. We've got a lot of bills, so if you can just... If you're going to repeat what others said, maybe you can make that very short.
I appreciate that. I would just go back again to take things in context. We had a team that did that at one time. I understand funding was depleted. I think there might be a better way to collect this type of information.
Thank you. Okay. Next opponent. Again, let's not repeat previous testimony and be succinct if possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Robin Turner. My name is spelled R-O-B-I-N-T-U-R-N-E-R, and I am here with the American Civil Liberties Union of the State of Montana rising in opposition to Senate Bill 284. I'll start my testimony by reciting the right of privacy, which is in the Montana Constitution. The right of individual privacy is essential to the well-being of a free society and shall not be infringed without a compelling state interest. Montanans have an individual right of privacy which we hold tightly and dear. This bill authorizes broad access to personal information about individuals whose deaths may have resulted from suicide. It adds mental health medications to prescription drug registry, which is broad and invasive. I won't go into details because so many opponents already have. But what you think about from the issues of infringement on privacy is any legislation that implicates privacy must be narrowly tailored to effectuate a compelling state interest. It has to be a bona fide health risk, medically acknowledged, clearly and convincingly demonstrated. A quote that I think is really interesting from John Locke: the laws of nature require that each individual has an inherent property interest in their own person, has the capacity for the right of rational self-determination, which must be protected by civil society. And that, of course, includes our legislature. Many of the opponents have already spoken to many of the concerns that come from this broad seeking of individual information to justify reaching into private health records and storing that information from identifiable folks on a state database. You have to truly narrowly tailor that. What we've heard from the sponsor today is, of course, that we are interested in addressing suicide in Montana, but we also heard that one of the things he was thinking is he doesn't know what we'll find in this information. And that's not enough. That's not enough to infringe on the individual privacy of Montanans, to make this broad net over many Montanans' express right of privacy with no guardrails and store that information. We don't really have any requirements for protecting it. And so this just does not justify the protections that we are entitled to under our Constitution. You've heard plenty of ideas from other opponents about other ways to address this issue. And so therefore, we request that you take that and oppose Senate Bill 284. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other opponents in the room? Seeing none, we'll go online. And looks like we have Kristen Anderson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Kristen Anderson.
Go ahead, Kristen. You'll have to unmute yourself.
Hello. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Excellent. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kristen Anderson, A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N. I am double board certified in family and preventive medicine and serve as the chair of the Montana Medical Association's legislative committee. And I actively practice in Missoula and River Valley counties, mostly in geriatrics. And I will agree that Montana loses, sadly, many citizens at disturbingly high rates to suicide. And we do appreciate the spirit of this bill as an effort to reduce that. And in the spirit also of time, I just need to say that while it seems that the intent is to look at a select number of deaths by suicide, the bill calls for reporting mental health medications for all patients, as been said before. It is a chronic disease, and we caution the collection of this information by government that is stigmatized. We do support the concept of providing the ability of epidemiologists from the Department of Health and Human Services gaining access to de-identified information from the registry for research purposes. But as written, however, it just notes a designated staff person. The designated staff person should be specified, such as the epidemiologist. Additionally, it does not provide specificity of the department getting de-identified information. We had asked this protection of medical information. Also, we caution the committee to consider that this is just one part of a patient's medical record, and it would be misleading if it wasn't presented in the context of the individual's medical status and other medications that were being taken. Additionally, going into Section 2, it addresses registration and reporting requirements, and it really would expand significantly the types of medications providers would be required to report. And the breadth of this reporting would just be unworkable. Under two of the references, a definition of Montana law for mental disorder, it's important to see that the definition would mandate providing information for medications to treat a mental disorder, which listed as organic mental or emotional impairment that has substantial adverse effects on an individual's cognitive or volitional functions, but it does not include addiction to drugs or alcohol or drug and alcohol intoxication. I just have to say we have more questions than answers at this point. I do think that we need to consider our patients that are struggling with addiction or other issues. Is the intent of the bill to focus on controlled substances with an addictive potential? In my experience, many patients who ultimately seek help for depression and are at risk for suicide are treated with medications that are not considered addictive. As physicians, we want to break down the barriers to patients seeking care for this. In some cases, for patients to decide to come to a physician for help is often the end result of months, if not years, of interpersonal conflict and reluctance to seek that help. They've probably experienced many family members and friends pleading with them to see a doctor, and I'd be surprised if any of us want to see a limit to patient care in that setting because of barriers to their care. I can assure you that Montana physicians are working diligently to prevent suicide in the setting of limited resources. In behavioral health, isolation, high concentrations of citizens at risk for suicide, alcohol use as a patient self-treatment strategy, and stigma. So I ask that we table this bill and work together in keeping Montana safer and healthier overall. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other opponents, any informational witnesses?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Carl Rostin, Carl with a K, Rostin, R-O-S-S-T-O-N. I'm the Suicide Prevention Coordinator for the Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services, and I'm here to provide any information specific to Section 8 concerning the Office of Suicide Prevention.
Thank you. Any other informational witnesses? Seeing none in the room, we'll go online. We have Nikki Griffiths.
Nikki Griffiths.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nikki Griffiths, G-R-I-F-F-I-S. I'm with the Department of Labor and Industry as the Montana Prescription Drug Registry Program Manager, and I'll be available for questions.
Thank you. Okay. Questions from the committee? Senator Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the bill's sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, do you see constitutionally that we have a compelling state interest in this bill?
I think we do. I think that suicide is a huge problem for the state of Montana. I think that's a pretty compelling interest.
Thank you.
I do.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Senator Heimbaugh.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to talk to Mr. Kuntz. Mr. Chair, Senator Heimbaugh.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kuntz, I was just wondering, you made the comment that we used to do this. How did we do it? How did we used to do it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Heimbaugh, the opponents brought it up in more depth, but when we had a suicide task force, that was part of what that group did, was go over each individual medical record.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kuntz, so what changed that we can't do it now? What's the difference?
Mr. Chair, Senator Heimbaugh, the funding went away to bring that group of people together. I do believe that there's still the statutory ability to do it, but somebody has to write the checks to bring 12 people from around the state to get together and look at those.
Thank you.
Questions, Senator Weber?
Mr. Chair, for Mr. Rostin, please.
Chairman, Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rostin, you are the state suicide coordinator, or what is
yes,
your
ma'am.
Title?
I am the suicide prevention coordinator for the Department of Public
Prevention
Health.
Coordinator, sorry. One of the things that the other opponents talked about was the HIPAA requirements to protect a person's health records. And one of them noted that even when you die, that your health records are protected for 50 years. How do you deal with HIPAA as a suicide prevention officer?
When we did the suicide review team, and just for clarification, that was a three-year project. It was sunsetted after it was only set for 3 years, and then expired. How we dealt with it at that point was all information was de-identified. We weren't allowed to report back on any individual suicide. We were only allowed to speak in general terms, total number, total age group, that type of stuff, but general demographics. No specific identification was used at all.
Thank you.
Senator Gross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Rostin, Mr. Rostin, could you speak to the broad definition of medications for mental disorders? How did your suicide prevention team deal with that?
We would, as part of that, we would ask, we would work with county coroners, and we would ask them to do toxicology reports, and that would come back from the state crime lab when toxicology reports were done. And they would only categorize, we would get individual what was in the system, but anything that was reported out were in general categories. In other words, opioids, benzodiazepines, psychotropics. So it was largely based on what was considered to be a psychotropic medication. That did not include any off-label medications, because there's no way for us to be able to identify specifically what that medication was being used for, unless it was specifically a psychotropic, like a you know, SSRI or antipsychotic.
Follow up, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rostin, could you tell me, do coroners, when they run a toxicology report, are they looking for all class of drugs, including something that would just be over the counter, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gross, yes, it would be, they would, the coroner would draw blood, basically, send it to the lab, and they would identify anything that was in the person's body, including over-the-counter medication, Advil could be. The important thing also to remember concerning our work, one of our difficulties in gaining this information was that the department doesn't have any authority over coroners. And so although it was recommended that any suicide toxicology report was taken, seldom was it. Only a percentage of it was, because we didn't have any authority to say you have to do this.
And further questions from the committee? Senator Molnar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the sponsor, please. Mr. Chairman, Senator Glenn, apparently the information could be heavily redacted. Currently we have many statewide suicide prevention programs and outreaches. The federal government has some there in Montana. From the numbers I've been hearing, they are seriously challenged to make a dent. Will this information, as redacted as it might be helpful to these people, or is it just information somewhere in a book?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Molnar, I don't know the answer to that. I guess my intent is to find out if there's anything we can glean from this information. I don't want to know who's on it. Frankly, I don't care whether they're using off-label or on-label. Any way that they're using that medication, if there's some kind of correlation between these drugs and them committing suicide, that's what's important. That's what I'm trying to get to, is are some of the things that we're prescribing actually causing our problem to get worse? And I don't know, but it's a different way to look at the problem.
Your final question, Mr. Chairman? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Glenn, HIPAA was spoken about by several. Can, and I don't know this, can you tell me, is it a HIPAA violation if a person is deceased to take some of their information and put it into a registry to be analyzed and quantified? Or once they're dead, is there no HIPAA protection, especially if the information is not identifiable to the person?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Molnar, I can't really speak. I'm not a HIPAA expert, but what I can tell you is that DPHHS looks at a lot of that information, and they are able to, they're, I don't know what the term is, but basically they have an exemption. They're authorized to look at personally identifiable information, and then they don't disclose that, and they wouldn't disclose that to the in this report. The report would be about statistics and how many of the suicides were on what drug. So it's not, we're not looking to out anybody. I think that the folks at the Prescription Drug Registry are willing to try and work with us to figure out a way that information really isn't available to even everybody that sees the Prescription Drug Registry. It would just be available to the people who are collecting the data for the report. And I think that is, I'm not looking to get the identifiable information, looking to get the numbers, the statistics, the data.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, for the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, Senator Glimm, you stated before that we have, the legislature has constitutional authority to gather this information. Do we have constitutional authority to override our HIPAA rights?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Weber, I don't think we're overriding the HIPAA rights. I think that DPHHS has the authorization to look at that. They already look at lots of that information in the realm of Medicaid and all different other kinds of health issues because they pay those bills for people. So that information too is protected by HIPAA. So in that regard, it wouldn't be any different.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Okay, any other questions? I just have one, and then you can close. Senator, I'm just going to kind of clarify here. So you're wanting a registry that's pre-death, correct?
Correct.
Why not just have a bill that has a post-mortem toxicology report that's sent to the DPHHS? Why do you need to know beforehand?
Mr. Chairman, the difficulty in that is, my understanding is that the toxicology report, when they do a typical toxicology report, is very general and looks out for Mr. Roston labeled a number of the drugs on opiates or this general descriptions of drugs. What I'm after is getting to the specific drug that was prescribed, because we want to know exactly which one it is. And I think if we report that in, it's easier to get it out. Otherwise, we're looking at a lot of time trying to track that down. You have to try and figure out who was the prescribing doctor for every one of the suicides. Were they seeing more than one doctor? Did they see a psychologist, a family doc, somebody from out of state? We have no idea. It's really hard to get all that information, and that's a lot of extra work, and the coroner is the only one that's local. They're already taxed. Doing it into the Prescription Drug Registry seemed to be the easiest way to get all that information collected, and then it's a fairly cheap ask to pull that down and create a report.
All right, go ahead and you can close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I think through your questions, I covered a lot of what I was going to cover in the close. But I guess I'm just going to sum up with we've had suicide be a major problem in Montana for a long time, and we've battled it the same way for many years. We throw a lot of money at trying to prevent it, and we don't seem to be getting any measurable results. So this is just a different way to try and see if we can figure something else out, and it doesn't cost very much. I think I'm more than willing to work with some of the opponents that had questions about privacy. I'm not after trying to out anybody's privacy, not trying to stigmatize it, but I think that there could be a correlation to this, and I think that that would be an important thing to find out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Senator Glenn. This closes the hearing on Senate Bill 284. We'll now start the hearing on House Bill 147. Representative Gillette, would you like to open on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Representative Jane Gillette, and I'm from House District 64, which is in Gallatin County. So that's Four Corners, Gallatin Gateway, Big Sky, and West Yellowstone. And I'm here today to present to you House Bill 147. This bill was developed in the Children, Family, Health, and Human Services Interim Committee. You heard its sister bill maybe a couple of weeks ago. These two bills put together have the impact of reducing the number of children that we send out of state who require psychiatric residential treatment or therapeutic group homes. In general, we send out of state children who are more acute, so they might have a risk, just to refresh your memory, they might have a suicide risk, or they might have a runaway risk, or a cutting risk, or aggressive behaviors, things like that. And sometimes our facilities are not able to manage those kids that have a higher level of need. And so what we do is we send them out of state. When we heard in committee, we asked the PRTFs, again, that's the Psychiatric Residential Treatment Centers, when we asked them what would it take to keep our kids in state, because you can imagine children have better health outcomes when they're closer to home and closer to their family and they can have more visitation with them. When we asked them what it would take, they said, of course, more money. And we have this, if you remember, this kind of strange situation where we actually pay more money to send our children out of state. In the instance of PRTFs, we we have a higher rate when we send them out of state than we keep them in state. So one of the simple solutions is simply to write that and make it equal and at least pay the same amount for our in-state to encourage the children to stay in state and not go out of state. So most of the fiscal note that you'll see is actually related to therapeutic group homes, where we don't have that same inequity. We actually pay the same for them. So the fiscal note is mostly driven from the therapeutic group homes. How the department intends to basically, it won't be all kids in a PRTF, by the way, that have that we pay that higher rate for, but it'll be some of them that meet certain criteria. So what the department will do is develop an assessment tool which rates the child according to the acuteness of their needs and then also their age, because it turns out that children who are much younger, especially in the therapeutic group home world and in PRTFs, I guess, the children that are very, very young tend to go out of state. Again, it's kind of a cost issue, because you can imagine that if you have younger kids, you need a higher staff ratio. So they will come up with a rating scale to rate the kids according to their acuity and their age, and children who fit those requirements, the rate will be higher for those kids. So some of the kids in the centers will have a higher rate, but others won't necessarily because they won't meet those standards. You might remember from the sister bill, there is a requirement for if a PRTF and a therapeutic group home accepts this enhanced rate, then they have to do their due diligence and evaluate on a case-by-case basis whether they can take care of the child in their facility or not, yes or no. They do have certain exceptions where they're exempted out if it's just a clear, like, not... they have no capability of caring for that child. Maybe they're a special needs child on top of needing psychiatric care, things like that. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for proponents, opponents, and questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Gillette. Proponents.
Mr. Chair, my name is Matt Kuntz, K-U-N-T-Z. I'm the Executive Director of NAMI Montana, and we gratefully rise in support this bill. We thank Representative Gillette for bringing it. I've been at NAMI Montana since June of 2008, and our state has been studying kids going out of state since then, and we always hit the same barriers, and I believe this is the first real effort to try to dig in and do the work and give the department the freedom to change it. And it is an issue, and we're grateful for Representative Gillette for digging into it. Thank you.
Thank you. Proponents in the room.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Bernadette Franks Ongoy, FRANKS-ONGOY. I'm the Executive Director of Disability Rights Montana, and we stand in support of this bill. As previously noted, this state has spent a tremendous amount of money sending our kids out of state when we know that if they are home near friends, family, and supports, that that would enhance their opportunity to do well. And this is a real great effort to keep our kids here in Montana getting their services. So definitely want to thank the sponsor for bringing this bill forward, and we hope that this bill does get a due pass.
Thank you. For their proponents. Seeing none in the room, looks like we have some online. First up, we'll go to Mary Windecker.
Mr. Chair, Mary Windecker.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Windecker. That's W-I-N-D-E-C-K-E-R. I'm the Executive Director for the Behavioral Health Alliance of Montana. We are the state-approved Medicaid agencies that serve adult and children's mental health, as well as substance use disorder treatment agencies and some of the tribal behavioral health agencies. We support this bill as a very much a step in the right direction to finally get providers the equivalent rate of what the out-of-state providers received. In addition, it will be helped if the full recommendations from the provider rate study that showed that Medicaid providers were receiving less than the cost of delivering the care across the board are enacted. So between those two things, we can finally be able to keep kids home and treat them here in the state where it is much better treatment for them. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Barbara Cowan.
Barbara. Good afternoon, Chairman McGillivray and members of the Senate Public Health, Welfare, and Safety Committee. Senator Gillette, thank you very much for sponsoring House Bill 147. My name is Barbara Cowan, spelled C-O-W-A-N, and I am here in support of HB 147. I'm also Vice Chair of the Behavioral Health Alliance of Montana. At Partnership for Children, we have two treatment homes for children ages 4 to 12. These kids have been diagnosed with serious emotional disturbances. Many of them are young enough, they really aren't even diagnosed, but they exhibit unhealthy and unsafe behaviors to themselves and others. We would like to join our colleagues across Montana in ringing the alarm bell on the fragility of this, children's services in the state in general. This bill is a response in part on the rising number of Montana's children being sent out of state. Children under the age of 10 were a category, so very young, and really our most vulnerable children were included in some of those kids being sent out of state. I also want to note, in addition to the support of 147, this really needs to go hand in hand with rate studies recommendations implementation as well. Why do we have enhanced rates for children under 10 and who require treatment at therapeutic group homes? I wanted to speak today as a professional and as a parent, as many of you have been parent or teacher or aunt, uncle, etc., just to remind you what it's like to care for little children and why we need more hands in the homes to take care of them. I spoke to a Rotary Club early this morning in Missoula, and we laughingly said, children when they're five don't make it to the bathroom to throw up. They throw up in the middle of the living room. So we can laugh and remember the things like not being able to tie your shoes, etc. But our kids come in with a whole different baseline. They've had childhood abuse, neglect, hunger, multitude effects of poverty, and caregiver substance use. So their trauma brings them to a level of not being able to regulate their emotions. They often do self-harm, pulling their own hair out, scratching their arms until they bleed. That's the baseline for our kids. So not only are we sitting next to them, teaching them to read and write and catch up in school and join their first sports team, we're also helping them learn to regulate and to learn to calm their fears. And be able to do the normal things that kids in this stage should do, like make friends and have healthy adult-child relationships. We talk about prevention and treatment. It's also true. Let's also remember how little these children are when we think of sending them out of state or not having capacity to provide the care they need. We have over 100 beds for children in care that have already closed in our state. Too many of our children are being sent out of state, and this bill, with the rate study, gives us a way to begin addressing our most vulnerable children's needs in a much fuller way. Thank you for your consideration and for your support.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Tyson Schumacher.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Schumacher.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tyson Schumacher, spelled S-C-H. U-M-A-C-H-E-R, and I am the Chief Information Officer for Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch in Billings. In the interest of time, we'll echo what other folks have already brought up, but we believe that House Bill 147 gives the state tools to attack this problem by incentivizing providers to serve the youth most at risk of being placed out of state. YBGR supports this bill and urges a due pass to help Montana kids stay close to their communities. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Schumacher. You get an A-plus for briefness, and it's going to help pass the bill a lot. Just remember that as you continue to testify. Next, next proponent, we have...
I have Philip Quinn.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Philip Quinn, Q-U-I-N-N. I'm with Intermountain here in Helena. We also offer services across a good chunk of Montana. We also stand in support of Bill 147. I want to thank Representative Gillette again for bringing this forward. And I'm going to echo others in supporting the rate study funding as well. Coming from a different lens on this, I have several staff who have to make the referrals to higher level of care supporting clients in the community. And often what they get from our providers and from our community resources is simply that they're not available. There's just not enough staff, not enough agency people available to provide what's needed for these clients. So that said, I echo what others have said, and we also urge it to pass. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Quinn. Seeing no other proponents, do we have any opponents? Seeing none, do we have any informational witnesses?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Megan Peel, P-E-E-L, and I serve as the Bureau Chief for the Children's Mental Health Bureau, which oversees the psychiatric residential treatment facilities and therapeutic group homes that are referenced in this bill, and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Peel. Any other informational witnesses? Okay, seeing none, questions from the committee. I have one for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair.
So Representative Gillette, I think it was mentioned that this saves money. The fiscal note shows about a half a million or plus impact the general fund. So what's your thoughts on that?
Can you repeat that question, Mr. Chair? Sorry.
Representative Gillette. So I think I heard somewhere that this saves money, but there's a net impact to the general fund of about a half a million dollars.
Mr. Chair, this bill does not save money.
Okay, I must have misheard that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, what I will say about the fiscal note, and you have a couple of people are on the joint appropriations section B on your committee here, and what I will say about this fiscal note is it's very likely that it goes away because there's a trigger in this bill that should the legislature adopt a higher rate than 133%, that will take precedent over this. It just gets bundled into our base budget should we decide, like let's say that the legislature increased the rates for children's mental health services by 58%, but this bill increases it by 33%. Then the legislature's increase by 55% would take precedent. Does that make sense? I'm not sure if I'm making any sense.
Ooh. Well, we can discuss that another day.
Okay.
Okay, further questions? Senator Linz, Mr. Vice Chair.
For the sponsor.
Yes.
So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Linz.
Yes, Representative Gillette. The chair brought up a great point. If we're sending these kids out of state at this rate, and we pay this rate in the state, it should be a zero.
Mr. Chair, Senator Linz, yeah, I really struggled when we first saw this fiscal note. I kind of went bonkers and called the department because I know in committee that is what we thought. But the reality is therapeutic group homes, and that's why it's mostly driven by the therapeutic group homes. It kind of mostly is a wash when you're talking about the PRTFs. But when you get to the therapeutic group homes, we are paying the same rate both in-state and out-of-state. So basically, this bill just increases the rate for therapeutic group homes by 33%, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman. So if we were to amend this to eliminate therapeutic group homes, it would take it down to zero?
Mr. Chair, Senator Linz, it would not take it down to zero, but it would reduce it. And it won't take it down to zero because there are some children that would meet the qualifications of being, like, let's say, really young and having an acute issue that are organically already being served in the facilities. And so they would meet the criteria even though we haven't sent them out of state. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
All right. Any questions? Further questions from the committee? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillette. On the fiscal note, I just have a question. How many children are we talking about in this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, on the fiscal note, page 3, it kind of starts to get into the details of that. Well, for the therapeutic group homes, they're anticipating the first year that there would be an estimated 28 children. By the time we end up in 2027, they're estimating that they would have about 34 children per year that would qualify for this new rate. If you look down a little bit further, sort of middle of that page, it goes on to the therapeutic group homes. And the therapeutic group homes, they're estimating in 2024, it would only be about 8 additional children. And then by the time we hit 2027, we're looking at about 40. As I understand, that more substantial increase that you see in therapeutic group homes compared to the PRTFs, where it's pretty stable, it's about, you know, the high
20s, low 30s. It's kind of a stable number. The difference there is that they're anticipating that we had quite a few therapeutic group homes that have closed over these past couple of years, and they're anticipating that some of those therapeutic group homes will increase their capacity, either come back online or start to expand their services, which had retracted over the past couple of years. Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. Representative, how many, right now, right at this moment, how many group homes do we have to service these children?
I have that somewhere in here. Although maybe Ms. Peel kind of has it a little bit quicker at the top of her head, but I do have that data. But, oh, here we go. Can I redirect that, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Weber, yeah, if you just give me one moment, I do have it. We have two PRTFs in the state that have approximately 150 beds total, and then for group homes, there's another hearing on group homes that's happening upstairs. I gave some of my copies away. We have six providers that that provide therapeutic group home services in Montana. Many of them have more than one group home, and they're generally licensed for about eight beds. But if I look at here, I can do the math really quick and tell you how many beds. It's right around 260 beds total.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, would the sponsor like to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's a good bill to keep our kids in state, close to their family and close to their resources and friends. It certainly makes it easier on families when they can travel and see their kids easier than having to go to Texas to see their child. Definitely helps for the stability. Thank you so much for a good hearing, and I ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gillette. Let's close the hearing on House Bill 147. And we'll now begin the hearing on House Bill 200. Representative Esmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I pass out a few handouts?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Sherry Essman, that's E-S-S-M-A-N-N, and I am representative from House District 52. Larry Brewster, Representative Brewster, always says he is the best part of Billings, but I think mine is, so we'll fight about that another time. Today, I bring before you House Bill 200. This is a bill that was requested of me by one of my constituents, and the bill is attempting to revise the Montana Safe Haven Newborn Protection Act. This bill would clarify that a newborn may be anonymously surrendered to a newborn safety device or by placing an emergency call to the appropriate emergency service provider. In addition, the bill also defines what a newborn safety device is. In providing a safe vehicle by which an anonymous newborn surrender may be made, we can save more babies from being abandoned in a tragic and often deadly manner. Just a few years ago, July 2018, There was an incident in Lolo, Montana, that a baby was abandoned in a forest. And the only thing that saved that baby was an alert deputy of the county that heard some whimpers and kept following the sound and found that baby alive. We don't know how many times we don't find those babies. There are currently 135 newborn safety devices in operations in 9 states. There are 24 infants that have been safely surrendered since this project started in 2017 in Indiana. Most recently, just a few days ago, a baby was surrendered in a safety device in a fire station in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and that baby was saved within 90 seconds. The handouts I passed out have articles both from Fox News and from the Billings Gazette regarding that situation. I have some proponents here today. They have some great stories to tell, so I'm going to stand for questions and let my proponents tell their stories. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Espin. Proponents for Senate Bill 200.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jill Bushman. That's B-U-S-H-M-A-N. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I'm here to support the change to the Safe Haven Law to allow for safe newborn safety devices in HB 200. A year ago, I read a story about a baby being abandoned in a dumpster in New Mexico. I was in shock. As a wife and mom of 4 kids, I couldn't imagine putting my baby in a bag to be discarded, let alone a dumpster. I began to wonder if this had ever happened in Montana. A brief internet search, and there it was, a Missoula news story about a baby that had been abandoned in a dumpster behind a bowling alley in 1999. A teenager walking by at midnight heard her cry, and she was rescued and lived. This case was a contributor to the Montana Safe Haven Law put into effect in 2001. 20 years later, and we are still seeing traumatized moms putting their babies in dumpsters across America. My heart goes out to these women who feel this is their only option. When we install a newborn safety device, we will create one more option, one more chance to avoid tragedy. This safety device will be the last resort before the dumpster. When I began working with Representative Espin, I realized this has happened more often than I thought, and certainly more often than it should. In 2022 alone, there have been news reports of 59 infant abandonments in the nation. While speaking to a friend about this bill, she shared with me the story of a family member whose life began 28 years ago when she was rescued from a dumpster in Butte, Montana. Her biological mom, a woman who was struggling with her mental health while concealing a pregnancy from her family, delivered a baby in the bathroom. She wrapped the baby in blankets and disposed of her in the dumpster. Fortunately, after several hours, the baby girl was found. Thank goodness, tragedy was avoided. After a brief hospital stay and 9 months in foster care, she was adopted, and that little girl was on her way. The birth mom, who ended up in the hospital due to complications from the birth, was thus identified and because of the abandonment, served time in jail. I shudder to think of how many babies have been discarded that never became known. The true number may never be known. This is a small, simple step that we can take that will give both mother and child a possibility to avoid a tragedy. I want to thank you for your time and encourage you to vote in favor of HB 200. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bushman. Further proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Pam Western, W-E-S-T-E-R-N. I'm a former licensed adoptive and foster parent, and I'm here in support of House Bill 200. On August 4th, 2003, a 23-year-old woman gave birth to a newborn baby boy. It was not the typical birth you might imagine. The birth did not take place in a hospital or birthing center with trained medical professionals and a loving partner. This young woman gave birth in her home where she was completely alone. She knew she was pregnant and that she wanted to give the baby up for adoption, but she had hidden her pregnancy from everyone in her life and had not gotten any prenatal care. The baby's father was not in the picture. Thankfully, this mom did know to tie the umbilical cord off. The birth was fast and without any complications. She had some supplies in her home, like diapers and formula, as she was occasionally babysitting for a relative. She cared for the baby for 2 days before deciding to take him somewhere to surrender him for adoption. She did not have a plan for how she was going to surrender him, but she had heard about the safe haven law somewhere before. On August 6th, she drove with the two-day-old baby boy to a local city building in Bozeman. The employees there kindly let her know that they could not take the baby, and they directed her to a nearby fire station where they assured her she could get help. I can't see my paper now. I'm asking you to please vote yes in favor of House Bill 200. Giving mothers the awareness of a local baby box will help moms like the one in my story who are in a desperate situation and have no plan in place. We already know that in communities where baby boxes are advertised, desperate mothers are able to get much-needed help for themselves and their children in a fast and concise manner. The baby in my story was born on August 4th, 2003, was brought to our home. In the afternoon on August 7th. He did not have a name, and his older 4.5-year-old brother was not having that. He blurted out, "Let's call him Switcher," which is interesting because now Andrew is a baseball player and a switch hitter. He is a freshman in college. Thank you. And pursuing a career as a physical therapist. If Andrew were here today, he would want you to vote in favor of House Bill 200 and to know that he is grateful for his adoptive family and hopes that other babies will be given the best opportunities to have safe and fulfilling lives.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good afternoon, Chair McGillivray, members of the Senate Public Health Committee. My name is Heather O'Hara, O'HARA. I'm a master's prepared registered nurse and vice president with the Montana Hospital Association. MHA stands in support of House Bill 200 and would like to thank Representative Espin for sponsoring this bill. MHA would encourage a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents in the room? Okay, we have some online, looks like. First proponent online would be Monica Kelsey.
Good evening, Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing this bill. I am the founder of Safe Haven Baby Boxes. We stand in support of this bill. We have, as they spoke earlier, 135 active boxes. We have had 24 infants in our box since 2017. Excuse me. And I just want to share with you what one of the mothers that used our box actually told us. We have a counseling service, free counseling for any of these parents. They can call our hotline and receive this at no cost to them. And this person is now a volunteer for our organization that utilized one of our boxes a few years back. But I asked her why she didn't walk into a firehouse and hand her child to a person because she knew that they were there. And she said something that has stuck with me all these years. She said, "I didn't want someone talking me out of a decision that took me so long to make." And as firefighters, I'm a retired firefighter and a medic. That's what we do. We try to solve problems. And these women don't want these problems solved. They want the anonymity. And the Safe Haven Law was passed 22 years ago. It has to be updated to allow 100% anonymity. Because we are seeing some of the worst cases in American history of infants being left dead, placenta still attached. alongside highways. We've had 10 abandonments in the last 3 weeks just in this country. So I ask for your support in this bill, and thank you guys so much for your time.
Thank you. So next online proponent would be Johanna Kennedy.
Mr. Chairman, I am not sure which one Johanna Kennedy is, so the next one that I do have their full name would be Jesse Browning.
Go ahead, Jesse.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jesse Browning. That's B-R-O-W-N-I-N-G. I'm a mom, an RN, and today I represent myself. Please vote yes, HB 200. I am from a rural area in Montana, and over two decades ago, I had family members who adopted a baby who was found in a dumpster in Montana and rescued when her cries were heard, first being mistaken for a kitten. She is now a lovely young lady able to pursue her dreams for her life. Sadly, some mothers with a baby are not aware of the options available to them in a crisis situation and feel they have nowhere to turn. A baby box option is just another layer of protection for babies and hope and an option for vulnerable mothers. In January of this year, it was reported a newborn was recently surrendered to Florida's only baby box. Across the country, these boxes have been used, lives have been saved. The hope is not only will this baby box be utilized as a last resort to save a baby's life, but that advertising for this will also spread more awareness for the Montana safe haven laws in general. The ultimate goal and end result would be for these women who are not ready for parenthood to understand adoption is a great option. Every single person in the room today was given a chance at life, and this baby box option allows newborns whose mothers are in a crisis situation the same chance. Please vote yes, HB 200. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Browning. I don't see any other proponents online or in the room, so let's go ahead and are there any opponents to House Bill 200? Okay, seeing none, any informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Heather O'Hara, please.
Mr. Chairman and Senator.
Mr. Chair, Ms. O'Hara, I just want to know, we hear the stories or we read the stories all the time, but or not all the time, but frequently enough that it's concerning. But how many abandoned children that you are aware of? What is the extent, I guess, of abandoned children in Montana?
Senator McGillivray and Senator Weber, I don't have that information in front of me in regards to how many individuals have come to a hospital to bring their baby forward that they don't want. I don't know that. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine. Another question. This is for Monica Kelsey.
Okay, Monica Kelsey, can you bring her back up?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Monica.
Okay, Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Kelsey?
Yes.
The baby boxes, what are they made of? I just kind of have in my head like a cardboard box, but I know they can't be just a cardboard box. What are they made of?
So the box is actually made of polypropylene plastic. It's the toughest plastic that you can purchase, and it's welded together to make a box that basically slides into the side of a firehouse or a hospital. And the door on the outside of the baby box is for mom to place baby in, and then the baby's actually retrieved from the inside of the baby box by fire personnel or hospital personnel. But it is made of polypropylene plastic. It's alarm activated. It calls 911 on its own. So mom doesn't have to do anything except open the door, place her unharmed newborn inside, shut the door and walk away. And within 2 minutes, the average time these babies are in our boxes is 2 minutes. The baby will be placed in the loving arms of a firefighter or a nurse within that 2 minute mark.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions from the committee? Senator Glimm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Glenn.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Aspin, there's no fiscal note, so what's the mechanism to get them purchased and installed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, thank you for that question. 99% of these boxes that have been installed to date have been done so through public funding. So there isn't anything exactly from Safe Haven, but the people who have installed them have formed groups, have had fundraisers, private donations, and had the ability then to have them installed. I would defer to Ms. Kelsey about the exact price, but I'm gonna say, based on our other hearings, that there's somewhere in the neighborhood of $17,000 to $18,000 to buy one and put it in. There is some ongoing maintenance because they have to be alarmed because of, like she said, opening the box, an alarm goes off inside. When she closes a box, an alarm goes off. And so the people inside the facility, the 24-hour manned facility, know that there's a baby in there and they can get there immediately to take the baby out. There's only been one that I know of so far that was funded with municipal funds. So the city, county, whatever it was, thought enough of this idea to provide the funds to have the baby box installed.
Great, thank you.
Also, may I just follow up, Mr. Chairman? Representative Weber, on the back of the handout, or Senator Weber, I'm sorry, I'm used to being in the representatives. Senator Weber, the very back of the handout has a picture of, this is Ms. Kelsey on the left, and I don't know the other woman, but this is a picture of the baby box from the outside. And then partway in, this is Ms. Kelsey looking into the baby box from the outside, so you can see what it looks like from both directions. If you have any other questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Seeing none, would the sponsor like to close?
Mr. Chairman, committee, first I'd like to thank you for taking the time to hear us talk. Also like to talk to my proponents who, one drove from Billings, one came from Bozeman, the proponents online, thank you. I know it's a hard testimony to give when you're so close to the situation. This bill would allow for anonymous surrender of a newborn to a Safe Haven baby box. The surrendering parent has access to a huge packet of information that is left inside the box that tells them what their ongoing parental rights are. It encourages them, if they are of a heritage, that they contact someone to let them know that the baby has some native roots. So we're not leaving them without resources. In our state, they have 60 days. If they change their mind, they can follow up with the powers that be. They can call the hotline, they can get referred, and they can follow the procedures if they have a change of heart. But if not, the baby goes through the system and, as we heard, goes to foster care and hopefully to a willing and deserving adopting family. Talked about that. So just please help the proponents of this bill and myself. We'd love to see this go into effect. We ask for a due pass to continue to save more babies. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Representative. Okay, this closes the hearing on House Bill 200. We'll now open the hearing on House Bill 286.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Representative Mary Cafferro, C-A-F-E-R-R-O. And I bring before you for your consideration House Bill 286 and respectfully ask for a due pass. House Bill 286 clarifies legislative intent to make it clear that mental health promotion in the HEART account includes evidence-based youth suicide prevention programs. That's it. It is not a new program. It does not prescribe to the department what they will or won't do. It simply makes it clear that our intent is that the HEART account can be used to fund mental health promotion, youth suicide prevention. Department of Health and Human Services, in their March 2022 suicide prevention report, it was reported that suicide is the number one cause of preventable death in Montana for children ages 10 to 14. So suicide is the number one cause of preventable death in Montana for children ages 10 to 14. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Caffaro. Are there proponents for House Bill 286?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matt Kuntz, K-U-N-T-Z. I'm the executive director of NAMI Montana, and we're really grateful to Representative Caffaro for carrying this bill. When the HART account was set up, we worked with the prior budget director and the prior head of the Addictive and Mental Disorders Division to put mental health promotion in the HART account, and that was the description of the former Addictive and Mental Disorders Division director. And we agreed with the best youth suicide prevention programs work on mental health promotion, particularly emotional decision-making skills. You know, like that is what's been proven to make it work. But when it got implemented, the budget director left, the Addictive and Mental Disorders director left, and it was some new folks trying to interpret mental health promotion. And what was difficult was it turned out that there is a lot of silos within DPHHS. There's suicide prevention, and then there's substance abuse prevention. We really didn't have a spot for mental health promotion, so it didn't roll out consistently and coherently, and makes it really hard for the communities to partner if they don't know what's coming. So we just asked Representative Caffaro to bring this bill forward, make it really clear that youth suicide prevention is included, because mental health promotion didn't work. And also using the legislature's existing definition of evidence-based practices, so we're not starting over. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Further proponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, my name is Rebecca Myers, M-E-Y-E-R-S. I'm here today in support of the bill for Bozeman Health, Chaudière Children's Hospital, and St. Peter's Health, and just ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the Senate Public Health, Welfare, and Safety Committee. My name is Patrick Iwaki. That's spelled Y-A-W-A-K-I-E. I'm representing the Blackfeet Tribe today in support of House Bill 286. I want to provide some statistics as well from the same document from the sponsor. It's DPHSS titled Suicide in Montana, Facts, Figures, and Formulas for Prevention. In Montana, between 2011 and 2020, the highest rate of suicide is among American Indians, 32 per 100,000, although they only can constitute 6% of the state's population. For American Indian students, 17.6% had attempted suicide one or more times in the 12 months before the survey. And then on a personal note, I have children who have friends who were as young as 14 committing suicide in my tribal community. Having children and coming from my tribal community in this state, we are suffering. Our children are suffering. We must be working around the clock to ensure all Montana children have a chance at life, and that programs are available in the prevention of suicide. So please support House Bill 286. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Iwaki. Further proponents? Seeing none and none online. Do we have any opponents for House Bill 286? Seeing none, any informational witnesses?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Carl Roston, Carl with a K, Roston, R-O-S-S-T-O-N, and I am the Suicide Prevention Coordinator for the Department of Public Health, and here to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Okay. Questions to the committee. Senator Gross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Rostin. Mr. Chair, Mr. Rostin, what's the budget for suicide prevention in Montana?
To give it a little bit of history, I've been in this position since its inauguration in 2007. Initially, I had $400,000 in general fund money. Of that, $200,000 of that, half of it is geared toward or set to the crisis centers for the Suicide Prevention Lifeline. My position is take it out, leaving at that time about $120,000, $130,000 for suicide prevention for all ages. As of 2017, we were able to add grant money from House Bill 118, and that was $500,000 for all programs, all ages. For fiscal year 2023, this year, that general fund money now is at $447,000. So not much more. I still have the $500,000. So to answer your question, a long way is about $947,000 in the budget.
Okay, thank you. I think I got it. I'll have to go back and look at that. But another question for Mr. Rostin, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rostin, what's the rate of suicide in Montana for the last like 2 or 3 years?
Our rate, once again, it's important to have some comparison because to give it some meaning. Nationally, the suicide rate is about 14 per 100,000. In Montana, that rate is about 26 per 100,000, so nearly double the national rate. It's also more than double the national rate for kids for suicide. The rate is much, nationally, the suicide rate is about 4 per 100,000 for kids. For Montana, it's about 12 per 100,000. To give you an estimate, that equates out to being about somewhere between 13 and 15 kids a year.
That's tough to hear. Mr. Chair, Mr. Rostin, is that rate growing?
It fluctuates because of our small numbers. That's an average. That 13 to 15 is an average over the last 10 years. It has been slowly increasing. 2021 was a very bad year for our youth and for our state. Nationally, Montana and kids, we lost 23 kids to suicide in 2021. In 2022, that number dropped down to 15. So back down to what I would say pre-pandemic numbers. But that is an average over the last 10 years, but it is slowly increasing, and that number is growing nationally, too. Montana's in proportion with what's happening nationally.
All right. Mr. Chair, my last question.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Rostin. So I don't want to try and speculate what the reasons might be at this point for why that rate is going up at such an alarming rate. But can you tell me just very clearly, are Montana's failed suicide prevention programs the reason for this growth?
No. Our issue, when we take a look at our programs, we follow national guidelines. We consult with SAMHSA, AFSP, the National Council for Mental Wellbeing, the CDC. We follow guidelines nationally. The trouble we have is because of the size of our state, and there's a number of factors that if you take a look at the top 10 states for suicide, 8 out of the top 10 are Rocky Mountain region states. And then you have to understand that suicide is a multifactored issue. And in the Rocky Mountain region, we have a perfect storm as far as all those factors happening at the same time. And when we take a look at one of the biggest issues, we have stigma, which is a major, major issue in our state. But we also have ruralness. We're an isolated state. Mr. Kunson mentioned silos. There's silos across the whole state. We struggle working with school districts because each school district is kind of an independent entity. We know what we need to do, but taking it to scale is really difficult in Montana. We can get one school district to do things, but the next one won't or can't. So taking it to scale is a major, major issue with limited resources.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, Senator Weber?
For Mr. Rostin. Mr. Rostin, or Mr. Chair, Mr. Rostin, when we talk about kids, what's the age? Is that up to 18 or?
Mr. Chairman,
how do you define the kids?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, whoever, we usually consider it to be 17 and under. Legally, 18-year-olds are adults. However, of course, we know in our schools many times there may be 18-year-olds. But when we talk about, if we focus on school-aged, then it's any child that's in a public school, and that could be 18. But most of our programs are looking, really focusing on, we have some programs for elementary age, but most focus on middle and high school.
Thank you.
Other questions? Seeing none, Representative Cafaro, you'd like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and thank you to the proponents who came and testified on behalf of the bill and the informational witness, too. This is a very serious issue, but before I get into that, I just want to say it's really good to be back in this room with all of you. Chairman McGilvray and I were seatmates on Health and Human Services in the House in 2005 together, and we worked on some kids' Medicaid stuff. This is a very serious issue, and I hope that you can support this bill to help strengthen children and families in their communities. Again, it's not a program. It's just a clarification that one of the purposes of the HEART Act is youth suicide prevention. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cafaro. This closes the hearing on House Bill 286. So, members of the committee, do you need to take a quick break, or do you want to just power through this and take a break before we do executive action? Yeah, we're going to do that. Yeah, we got to do. We have to do one resolution just to open up some public testimony on SR 15. Let's just go ahead and do that, and then after we do that, we'll take a break before we do some executive action. So, members of the committee, there were some questions regarding one of the governor's appointments to the, Board of Alternative Health Care, and that individual is Nicholas Beckstrom. So I'm going to just open this up. For Mr. Beckstrom is online, and then there may be some opponents, too, for this. So we're just going to go ahead and open up for a proponent. Mr. Beckstrom, if you'd like to promote him, JC.
Yes, I can promote him.
Mr. Beckstrom, you'll have to unmute yourself. There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the panel. Of the committee, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, my name is Nicholas Beckstrom. That's B-E-C-K-S-T-R-O-M. And I make myself available today to answer any questions you may have about my nomination to the Board of Alternative Healthcare.
Okay, thank you. Just hang on there. Do we have any opponents for the nomination in the room?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ingrid Lovett, spelled L-O-V-I-T-T. I am the executive director of the Montana Association of Naturopathic Physicians. I do honor this committee's confirmation process and appear before you today to assist in transparency. We assumed that the candidate would be forthcoming and honest with the committee after financial interest and other possible conflicts of interest were raised publicly following his October 12th, 2022 appointment. First, disclosures were not made included in the candidate's September 21st application letter, which did not mention any relationship or ties to the healthcare industry. Then when the candidate introduced themselves to the Alternative Healthcare Board on October 26th, he again did not make any disclosures when fellow board members welcomed him as a public member. In that board meeting, when recusal and conflict of interest concerns were raised, he kept his camera off and did not respond. Then in mid-January, In testimony before the Senate, the spouse of this appointee made comments specific to regulations overseen by the Alternative Healthcare Board to which her husband was appointed. She also did not disclose possible conflicts of interest in her household at that time and made false statements regarding the training and practice of a profession overseen by the board her husband was appointed to. The appointee's spouse is the current Montana delegate to the American Medical Association, a past president and leader on the legislative committee of the Montana Medical Association, currently enrolled in the 2022-2023 Physician Leadership Program, and actively engaged in the legislative process this session on behalf of the Montana Medical Association. They have held positions or hold positions contrary to the professions licensed by this board for decades. Next, the candidate appeared before this committee on January 30th. He chose to appear and again did not make any disclosures. In fact, he stated only that he had been looking at a list of these boards and saw one that looked interesting. Then on February 8th, the candidate attended his second Alternative Healthcare Board meeting. And when concerns were raised about possible conflicts of interest, again, he did not respond or explore any of these concerns with his fellow board members. He engaged in discussion without disclosing that just a few weeks prior, his spouse stood before the Senate testifying on the exact items that the board was discussing on their agenda. Just in closing, I'll leave it to the committee to decide to what extent the lack of transparency is relevant to your appointment. From our perspective, it is always one thing to work together and build trust to carry out board duties. Inevitably, conflicts and overlap in life do arise. But it's quite another thing to elect to come before this committee, one of the highest powers in the state of Montana, and withhold relevant information while requesting your endorsement. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have, looks like, an opponent online.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Christine Diebel, go ahead.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Dr. Christine White, spelled W-H-I-T-E. I speak today in opposition to confirmation of the public member appointed to the Montana Board of Alternative Healthcare. I have actively practiced naturopathic medicine in Montana since 2002. During this time, I've served two terms for a total of 6 years on the Board of Alternative Healthcare. This, as you know, was volunteer time I gave in the service of my profession with the intent of assuring the safe practice of naturopathic medicine and direct entry midwifery in Montana. I was honored to be appointed and honored to serve to ensure Montana's regulations were of the highest standard for training in public safety. As a physician, I swore an oath more than 20 years ago that in part stated, I will conduct my life and the practice of naturopathic medicine with integrity and freedom from prejudice. I did this work with the board voluntarily and with dedication. I did this work in cooperation with a board consisting of another naturopathic physician, two midwives, an obstetrician, and a public member, along with the Department of Licensing staff. I came to those meetings knowing each one of us brought to the table the same commitment to integrity. To be clear, I don't believe that all members of a board need to be in full agreement on all issues. But I do believe they should be transparent when it comes to applying for a board position and working with the board. I also think there are bound to be elements in their personal and professional lives where there could be overlap, and disclosing those appropriately is critical to the integrity of the board. The lack of disclosure, the candidate's application, and therefore the Senate, the lack of disclosure in the candidate's application and before the Senate suggests a conflict of interest. I believe that disclosing the potential conflicts would have provided the opportunity to explore them openly. And I find myself questioning his judgment and intentions given that he did not choose transparency. I commend the candidate for a desire to volunteer and serve the citizens of Montana, but I humbly and respectfully ask this committee to please reject confirming this public member appointment to the Montana Board of Alternative Healthcare. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. White. Do we have another opponent in the room? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Amanda Osborne, O-S-B-O-R-N-E. I am the Vice President of the Montana Midwifery Association. Direct entry midwives are also licensed by the Board of Alternative Healthcare. In the spirit of respecting your time and the late hour of the day, I will keep my statement brief to say that we agree with the opponent that have spoken ahead of us, particularly the statements that Ms. Lovett has made. I have nothing further to add, but we share the similar concerns of his lack of transparency and lack of disclosing possible conflicts of interest.
All right, thank you. Any further opponents? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Senator Gross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my questions for Mr. Beckstrom. I've been talking a lot about trust the last couple days, Mr. Chair, Mr. Beckstrom. The Senate, the Montana Senate, really operates on trust, on relationships and trust, and I think you see that when we unanimously often confirm these boards. The fact that we can do them all at once is a privilege. Mr. Beckstrom, I'm really troubled by what I've heard here today. And given that the Senate operates on trust, can you please explain to us why were you not transparent with us? Thank you.
Mr. Beckstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator. When I filled out the application, there was a checkbox that said, to your knowledge, and Hannah Slessor, hopefully she can back up on this if there's not another question I'm missing, but to your knowledge, is there anyone who would oppose your appointment to this board? At that time, I had no knowledge of the existence of the Montana Association of Naturopathic Physicians, and being that they were naturopathic physicians, and the other board that my wife is on does MDs and DOs, I saw no conflict of interest when those were brought up in that first session. I pinned it as not a board member, but as just an observer, but introduced as a future board member after approval. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Beckstrom, didn't... You know, I think that's enough. Thank you, Mr.
All right.
Chair.
With the question, Senator Weber.
Yes, for Mr. Beckstrom. But Mr. Beckstrom, just to follow up on what Senator Gross was talking about, but when you did become aware of issues of disclosure and lack of transparency on your part, why didn't you come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator. I did talk to the governor's office about that and said that, you know, this is the case, it's the situation, and they didn't see any time that there was any conflict of interest, but asked me if at any time there was a conflict of interest, would you bow out of the vote? And I said, I certainly will. So as far as not disclosing, so when I initially put in the application, I saw no conflict of interest that needed disclosing that.
Follow up. So the governor's office, I guess, encouraged you to not disclose or be transparent?
I'm sorry, sir. I did not mean to interrupt you. Mr. Chairman, Senator, I apologize for your update. No, they did not say that at all. I talked to them about that, and I said, yes, it's true. This is who my wife is. And in the meeting, when it was brought up by Ms. Lovett, they said this is an appointment, no discussion. So I wasn't allowed to address it at that time. So, no, the governor's office was aware of it. They did not ask me to not be truthful in any way or disclose any information. This is just the first opportunity that I've had to publicly talk about this is on this meeting.
Follow up. So now that you're aware of the issues at hand, what is your opinion on your position or your on this board? Has it changed, or do you intend to continue to sit on this board? Is that your intent?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, at this time, I believe it is. I think I still have valuable knowledge, experience as a Montanan that I can bring to the board.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Senator Molnar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Beckstrom, you may have valuable insights and knowledge to bring to the board, but it seems to me that that there always be a shadow over your vote, and therefore over the board. Do you think that it's worth it to the board and to the people of Montana to basically wedge yourself in there at this point?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mullen, thank you. I have thought long on myself. As I initially stated, the first time I had a chance to speak to the committee, my only intention was to be of service to the state of Montana. And if it turns out that my service on this board would be more detrimental than it would be a benefit, then it might be time for another option. But at this time, I'm still trying to decide for my person. For me, I'm trying to decide on that. So I'm going to see how this goes.
Further questions from the committee? I have a couple, Mr. Beckstrom. So just curious, if you could reiterate your driving interest. I mean, I've read your application that you have certain skills. But what was your driving interest to be on this board?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This board in particular was just fascination. It was an interesting subject that I honestly knew nothing about. The other boards, I don't know if there was an awful lot of public positions that I saw open on other boards that I honestly don't remember the exact number of the list or anything like this, but everything that was available at the time, this one was the most interesting, and I thought I could learn and contribute some valuable things.
Okay. Were you recruited to the board by somebody? The governor's office recruit you, or how did you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, nobody recruited me. Nobody's asked me to be on this board. Nobody outside this committee now, and my personal family, maybe a couple friends after the fact, after I applied for it, has asked me to do anything. My own wife was even surprised after I put my application in and I told her about it. So no outside influence at all has recruited me or asked me to join this board or asked me to do anything. I'm my own person. I'm not influenced by anything like that.
I'll have just a couple more questions here, and maybe the other committee members do, but we received your letter on September 21st of 2022 after there was some expression of concern, I assume, from the governor's office. Had told you there were some concerns on our committee about conflicts of interest, but in your letter of September 21st, 2022, I don't see anywhere where you address that issue of addressing the conflict of interest.
Well, I think the letter was, my intent was to let you know that I'm aware of somebody opposing my nomination to this board and that I would be willing to talk about specifics in a sentence such as this. I guess the reason behind the letter wasn't to explain everything, every point, because I wasn't exactly sure of all points that were being forward against me. I know that the conflict of interest is one of concern, but I wanted to make sure I addressed everything. We tried to do it in an in-person or like this in a Zoom meeting type setting.
Okay, I have one final question. It's something you said puzzled me here when I asked you what your interest was, and you said your interest was in being on a board that you knew nothing about. Can you explain that a little more thoroughly?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Certainly. I don't know, kind of a forever learner, I suppose you could say, forever student. Even in my off hours, as I relax, I watch great courses on various subjects on things that are basically our televised college, non-interactive college courses on that cable TV you can subscribe to. Read lots of documentary or watch lots of documentaries, read historical fiction books on science. Just like to learn about different subjects, and this is something I knew very little about.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Senator Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Beckstrom, I am a little put off by your letter in response to some of the concerns that were expressed throughout the committee membership and members of the public. And we appreciate that you were willing to write a letter and express that you would be willing to come back in and address these, you know, on a friendly demeanor and just to simply address some of the concerns. However, your letter in response was just a bit off-putting, and I was wondering why you used the phrase, "I was made aware of an accusation," versus perhaps downplaying that a little bit or detuning that a bit, and instead maybe say, "I was made aware of a concern." It just made it sound like it was already a free-for-all by the time you responded. And can you just explain what your mindset was at that moment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beard, certainly. No, I may not be able to explain my mindset at that moment, but other than maybe a poor choice of words, you're correct. I'm not experienced in political arena on maybe how to, you know, sand things, the rough edges off things sometimes. Having a scientific background, I guess I'm used to just stating how I see it. My intent was not to be in anybody's face or mean or pointed in any way. That just happened to be the word that came up at that moment. So there was no reasoning on my part behind it or attempt to upplay or downplay anything. It was just perhaps a poor choice of words that was found offensive by anybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beckstrom. Senator Glimm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Beckstrom, have you ever been to anyone who practices alternative health care?
Trying to think of how you would count alternative health care. Not a naturopathic doctor. I have been to a nutritionist and an acupuncturist before, but they're not really under my board's purview, so I don't know if you count them as alternative health care providers, but not to an actual ND themselves, no.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, Mr. Beckstrom, thank you so much for taking your time to be with us today to answer some tough questions. We appreciate your willingness to be here. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, committee, not a problem at all.
Thank
Everybody
you.
Everybody have a nice evening.
All right, thank you. Okay, members, let's take about a five-minute break and we'll come back for executive action.
Everything.
Are we?
too.
Every once in a while. Just,
in my mind, it was like a cardboard box.
It's just so pretty.
What did I do with that?
Could I maybe take?
Yeah, I'll just take yours.
Just a second.
Okay.
You got one?
I didn't find one yet. I can go make a quick coffee.
That's good. You can turn the number of the other visits.
There's a buddy on your one.
86, the one that we were talking about.
Yeah.
Sure, see the house.
It's already done.
It's already done?
Okay. Yeah, so, and I moved out of, I ended and moved. Yeah, yeah, you got it.
All right.
Oh, okay. Did you have the amendment for 150?
No. Oh, I have. Well, we have the amendment that was already passed on to it.
Oh, so it's been passed on.
Yeah, the one from contributes to the child remaining out of the home.
Okay.
That's okay. the one that's already on.
It's on there, and I couldn't remember that. Okay.
And then you were talking about doing another one, but you never sent me.
No,
language
not,
on the second
no,
one.
We're going to move this forward. As is.
As is. Okay.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Yes.
I'll be watching that.
Yeah, she's talking. Right. Well, I wouldn't talk to her.
All I have to do is I'll run everybody else. That's really not a good thing.
I didn't even make the connection.
What an awkward thing for the chair. How do you approach that? He introduced himself and they.
Oh, she was ready to stand.
Hi, I'm Bill. Hey, I hate your guts.
And that's how it went down.
Yeah. But maybe it was just as well that Anna didn't testify because she says, and he's just like going, I'm going to watch the great courses.
Back down at the governor's office. And she's
That's what I got.
Okay, okay.
She's fine, let me
know.
E-I-O.
E-I-E-I-O.
Okay, here we go. Well, I better double check with the chair before we go to. Talk until I hit the bill. Why can't I sit down? Hi, girl.
I guess I.
Are you representing?
Did he? What were the ones he told you, Maddie?
That we're doing?
Yeah.
He told me SB 1. 8, SR 13.
So not 266.
No, there's still an amendment.
And 13 and 16.
And 16.
Okay, so I'll put them up on the board.
I'm fine.
Oh, he's putting the executive action.
Jordan's going to tell me.
What is today? Today's Veterans Day.
Today's
Day.
Okay. So, do you have his proxy? You could just take
I had to.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were like that.
You're still telling me.
You're the
vice
chair.
Let me just, public health will come back to order. Let me just ask you, members of the committee, of the bills we heard today, I'm wondering if we're all good with 200. That was the baby box bill. All right, let's throw 200 on the bottom of the pile here.
HB 200.
Okay, members, we're going to 36.
That's his bill.
Okay, yeah. Okay. All right. Very funny.
So just HB 200.
All right. Okay. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 150 do pass as already amended.
Okay, we amended that once?
We did. If you'd like, I can explain.
Okay, go ahead.
So we amended this and then decided that maybe some of the language in 150 wasn't exactly maybe what we wanted to see. So I thought I'd maybe kind of work it over. Page 2 of the bill, you know, so line 14, treatment plan may not include a drug testing requirement unless the court finds substance use of the parent or guardian contributed to the removal of the child from the home, and then we amended, or contributes to the child remaining out of the home. Senator Glimm had talked about, and we've talked about in committee since then, about the concept of substance use, substance abuse, you know, what substance use disorder, and what that all means. And so I went round and round on this and came back to the fact that in this instance, maybe substance use is a good term, because in reality, it is the substance use that contributes to the removal of the child from the home. So if it is of that level or whatever that is, you know, and it is under the treatment plan, or it, they found it out after the fact as part of the investigation, and it's keeping the child from remaining out of the home. And so I just had to leave it there, members. I went round and round on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, for any discussion on the bill? Senator Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be a no. I still think that I think that that should be in there. So.
Okay. Any discussion?
Question.
Question's been called. We'll take a voice vote. Voice vote.
Senator Lenz.
Aye.
Senator Beard.
Yes.
Senator Glimm.
No.
Senator Gross.
Yes.
Senator Heinbaugh.
Yes.
Senator Kelker.
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Molnar. Senator Weber?
Yes.
Chair McGilvery?
Yes.
Seven yes, two no.
Okay, SB 150 passes public health. Motion carries. Okay, we'll go to Senate Bill 196.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 196 do pass.
Okay, members of the committee, I'm sure all remember this bill. This bill was an act requiring payment parity for health care services delivered by means of telehealth. So essentially, Blue Cross Blue Shield came in as a proponent for this bill. There was a little bit of confusion, and I think I've got that confusion cleared up. So they do pay at parity for video conferencing telehealth. But when there's a phone call, they don't pay at parity. They pay, say, 70%. I don't know if it's exactly 70%, but we'll say 70% of a $100 bill, which would be $70. So the bill then would make it where they would pay at parity with 100% of that cost. So that's the bill, and just wanted to make sure we understood it. And there's one amendment. I don't know if anyone's going to move this amendment. Nobody wants to move the amendment. Okay. Discussion of the bill. Senator Glenn.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, so the parity is 70% of what an in-person doctor appointment would be.
That's my understanding. Or also a video conferencing appointment. Senator Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be a no for two reasons. One, I was hit with a number of messages and emails, people begging for telehealth services in rural areas and for shut-ins. I had to go back to the 2021 session to pull out the information and watch the hearing video over again that we already had it in the state of Montana. So that was one ding on my favorability of this bill. It was portrayed to the public inadequately or with a lot of confusion. My second reason is because I don't believe that using telehealth services causes the same wear and tear on a doctor's facility as going in and spending an hour in their facility, walking across the carpet, leaning against the walls, in and out the door, flushing toilet, washing hands, all of that. So I think that there is a cost savings when you use telehealth services, and I think that should be reflected by our medical community. Thank you.
Senator Molnar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe you can help me understand this. I thought I did, but now I'm getting lost in the weeds here again. But, okay, so if an in-office visit is $100 and a tele-visit is $50 and they're going to pay 70% of $50, how is that our issue? Or is it that they are charging $100 for both and only being patient is only being reimbursed for 70?
Senator Glimm, or Senator Gross, can you respond to that?
Going to try, Mr. Chair and senators. So my understanding is that I don't know that costs, as Senator Beard
discussed are factored into the reimbursement rates, but I think maybe we're going a little, I don't know if we're trying to get in the weeds on this. I think it's pretty simple that you know, I'm gonna walk back, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, folks.
Well, to answer Senator Molnar, I don't know that the fee is the same. I just know that they're not paying the full cost of the telephone call.
That's what I think, too, that yeah. I got confused when Senator Beard was talking about wear and tear on the carpet. It's still up to the doctor to charge what they want to charge. And the question I think before us is, should they have to pay full compensation on a telephone call to the doctor, you know, kind of whatever that might be, whatever the doctor's charging. And I think that's what the bill does. Mm-hmm. And I would say, Mr. Chairman, that we always hear about how health insurance is too expensive. And then we mandate that the cost goes up to the insurance company. I would be far more comfortable letting the insurance company make their pitch to their possible new client that we cover 70% of your tele, or we cover 100% of your tele, or we cover 50%, but that's why your premiums are lower. I don't think this is a position for the state to get into.
All right. Senator Heimbaugh.
Mr. Chair, that probably, Senator Molnar probably made it make more sense to me. I think they need to pay everything that the doctor's charge, wherever it is. And I mean, that's up to the doctor, what the doctors want to charge, or what up to the patient. So I guess if that's what the bill does, if the bill makes them pay everything the doctor charges, I think it's a good bill.
Senator Glenn.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to read the first sentence on new section one. A health insurance issuer shall reimburse a health care facility or health care provider for services delivered by means of telehealth at the same rate as an insurer would reimburse the facility or provider for the services delivered in person. So, Senator Molnar, your telephone service is what this bill is going to do. It's going to mandate that they get the same price for that as they do for you walking in and being there in person.
Thank you for that clarification, but okay. That bolsters my resistance. I don't think it's up to us to mandate what two services are equal, especially if they're not equal in cost. Leave it up to the doctor what he wants to charge, and leave it up to the insurance company, and the person that chooses the insurance company can make the final decision.
Okay, Senator Gross. Speak now or forever hold your peace, because I'm going to call a question.
I'm a yes on this bill.
Okay.
In 2021, I carried one of the pieces of, so there were two bills in 2021 dealing with telemedicine. One of those bills dealt with the insurance side. I carried the bill that dealt with the licensing side. Both bills passed, and so it was Representative Rhonda Knudsen, I believe, who carried the insurance bill. And I remember some discussion at that time about telephone versus video conferencing. And beyond that, I know that the bills, I think that Representative Rhonda Knudsen's bill was almost a unanimous vote, if I'm remembering correctly. So both chambers have dealt with this issue before of insurance covering telehealth services. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that this bill is only adding in the phone call piece, as Senator McGillivray said, because folks out in rural Montana don't have broadband reliably. And for some folks, a telephone call is just going to work better. So I really appreciate the, you know, we listen to our constituents and hear their concerns. But if I'm not mistaken, we pretty much unanimously, I think it was 100-0 and a 50-0 on Representative Knudsen's bill, Mr. Chair. I that's late in the day. I know my head is not working as well as it was this morning when I woke up. So I think we might be getting wrapped around the axle, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I have the same admiration, Senator Gross, for telehealth. But that really isn't what we're the current telehealth system that we put in place in 2021. This is changing the reimbursement on that. It is odd to me, and I've changed my opinion over time on something that's by video where you can see the person, you can see their color, etc. And between that and a phone call, that doesn't have the same impact, I don't think. And I'm fine with that being reimbursed at a lower rate. But at the same time, I think Senator Molnar touched on it. That's kind of, we're getting in somebody else's sandbox to set that rate and such. But the weirdest thing about this was having one of the insurance providers come up and say, yeah, charge me more. And I'm going, what is going on? And the other two came up, soft proponents, I think. And I was just wondering what, to me, there were, it seemed so weird to me. What was going on there? Was one of them wanting that reimbursement or filling that need? Mentioning need, I don't think the people of Montana need this bill. They will have good telehealth going forward, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator, just one more time. Go ahead.
I was going to suggest putting it back in the folder and coming back to this on Friday.
No, we're not going to do that. It's going to take a
while. Well, that's what I was going to suggest, too, if we get some more information. But maybe, I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Senator Glenn.
I know what I want to do. Substitute motion to table.
Okay. Motion to table has been made. Take a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Lenz.
Aye.
Senator Beard.
Yes.
Senator Glimm?
Yes.
Senator Gross?
No.
Senator Heinbaugh?
No.
Vice Chair Kelker?
Oh, Vice Chair Kelker votes no by proxy.
Senator Molnar?
Yes.
Senator Weber?
Yes.
Chair McGilvery?
Yes.
6 yes, 3 no.
Okay, Senate Bill 196 is tabled. Okay, members of the committee, next we'll do SB 238.
Mr. Chairman, I move SB 238 do pass.
Okay, discussion on this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Speaking of sandboxes that I did in the other one, this seemed like a call to play in somebody else's sandbox, and I'm going to be a no.
Further discussion? Senator Glenn?
Mr. Chairman, I kind of like this. It sounded like people are signing the form that says who they want to get the check, and they aren't doing it. So if that's a problem, then I think we should fix it.
Senator Heinbaugh.
And Mr. Chair, I just don't understand why the insurance companies have a hard time with this and they do it with every other medical procedure, why they can't figure out where the checks go. But I guess I don't know why this thing. I don't like the bill.
You don't what? What'd you say?
I don't like the bill.
Oh.
Can I call question?
Question. Did you say you have a question or did you call the question? Question's been called. Take a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Lenz.
Nay.
Senator Beard.
No.
Senator Glimm.
Yes.
Senator Gross.
No.
Senator Heinbaugh.
No.
Vice Chair Kelker?
Vice Chair Kelker votes no by proxy.
Senator Molnar?
Yes.
Senator Weber?
No.
I'm sorry, was that a yes or no?
Yes. No.
No, sorry. Chair McGilvery?
No.
2 yes, 7 no.
We going to reverse the motion and table?
Okay, the motion is to reverse the motion and table. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed, same sign.
Senator Kelker votes aye by proxy.
Okay, SB 238 has been tabled. All right, members, we're at SR 13. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move SR 13 do pass.
Okay, any discussion on this?
Question.
No question has been called. Do a voice vote on SR 13. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Senator Kelker votes aye by proxy.
Okay, so unanimously carries. Okay, next we'll do SR 16.
Mr. Chairman, I move SR 16 do pass.
Okay, this is Board of Behavioral Health. Any discussion on it?
Call the question.
Question's been called. We'll do a voice vote. Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Senator Kelker votes aye by proxy.
Okay, SR 16 passes unanimously. Last, we have HB 200, Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move HB 200 be concurred in.
Okay, I was very compelled with this bill. I think it's a great bill. Any discussion on it?
Question.
Question's been called. I think we can do a voice vote. Those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Senator Kelker votes aye by proxy.
Okay. House Bill 200 is concurred in. Anybody would like to volunteer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vassman would like me to carry that on the floor.
All right. Senator Lenz will carry it, House Bill 200.
Mr. Chairman, were we going to do 266?
66.
No.
Oh, yeah, there's a...
Oh.
Yeah, we have
a... All right.
Yeah, that's still being...
Okay.
Okay, we'll do that Friday. Okay. Thank you, members of the committee. Public health is adjourned.
That one, oh, that reminds me. It's something I got to tell Maddie. On Gillette's, I think we need to strike off the therapy.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So on Gillette's bill...